This past January, I accompanied a group of European and American bishops to the Holy Land on their annual pilgrimage to express their support for local Christians, a population which has dwindled to less than 2% due to the economic difficulties and ongoing conflict. Well, besides visiting local Christian parishes in the West Bank and Israel and meeting with the faithful, the bishops also heard experts on a wide range of issues that concern the future of the Holy Land's small Christian community and the future of peace in the whole region. I was particularly struck by one of these seminars where Arab Christians living in Israel faced off with Arab Christians from the West Bank on the language of hatred, mistrust, and fear that permeates the political and social dialogue in the Holy Land. Both sides disagreed over whether Christianity's language of love could hold the answer to peace. Well, I wanted to hear from someone who would know the answers from more than just one side. So I asked Latin Patriarchal Vicar Father David Neuhaus to help me understand the subtleties of tensions between Jews, Christians, and Muslims. A former Israeli Jew, today he works with the Hebrew and Russian-speaking Catholics in Israel.
Our diocese is a little divided on the question of how to engage with Israelis and whether to engage with Israelis. Because if we lay it out in a very, very kind of flat way, we have Jordanians for whom Israelis are on the other side of an international border. Most Jordanians never meet Israelis and probably retain a kind of stereotype that Israel is the enemy against which we have been fighting for generations. Then we have Palestinians who live in the territories that came under Israeli occupation in 1967, and for them the Israelis are real but completely confined in settlers, soldiers, and policemen. For them, that's Israel. And then we have the Palestinian Arabs who came under Israeli rule in 1948 are Israeli citizens themselves, are part and parcel of Israeli society, although their struggle is from a place of marginalization. Their real struggle is for equal rights, for their own dignity as Israeli citizens. And they engage with Israeli Jews wherever they meet Israeli Jews. That means in day-to-day life, in the workplace, in hospitals. They live as a part of Israeli society. Their struggle, as I say, is for integration and equal rights. But they see a wide array of what Israeli society is. They speak the language of Israel. The Palestinian Arabs who are Israeli citizens are all, or almost all of them, fluent in the Hebrew language. They can open the newspapers, read, see the movies. They are part of the culture. And so it's no surprise then that we have very different perspectives on how to or whether to engage with the Israeli Jewish reality.
It wasn't that long ago that it was before the wall, obviously, that you would see sometimes Jewish people in an Arab village doing their shopping and so on. You don't see that anymore. And what does that mean for the reality on the ground, for knowing the other?
Well, I think that the wall has had a very dramatic effect on effacing the Palestinian presence. Israelis, particularly those who don't live anywhere near Jerusalem or near the 1949 border, Israelis who are not settlers, they hardly ever see Palestinians. Palestinians have become something of a news item. You hear about them on the news. And here we, of course, are talking about the Palestinians who came under Israeli rule as a result of the 1967 war. Even though that you are right in saying that Israelis did frequent places like the Bethlehem Market, the Beit Jala furniture stores, Ramallah restaurants before the erection of the wall, there still was never really an engagement with Palestinian reality. I think it's very unfortunate, and I say this as an Israeli Jew, that the teaching of the Arabic language was never taken seriously within the Israeli school system, so that Israelis were meeting Palestinians, but it was inevitably a very superficial meeting. The entire Arab world slowly became more and more absent, not only because of the physical wall that was constructed, but because the new generations of Israelis, a very big percentage of whom have their grandparents coming out of the Arab world, can no longer engage with the Arab world. The Arab world has become a complete enigma to them. And I think it's very important here to recall that a big percentage of the Israeli population are the descendants of Jews who were Arab Jews. Here we are speaking about Arab Christians. But there was a time when there were Arab Jews, Iraqis, Egyptians, Yemenites, Syrians, Lebanese, Egyptians, a whole Jewish Arab civilization that has been wiped out. Wiped out, of course, it's a kind of cultural disparition, a disappearance. And I think that this is very sad because it makes the wall even more of a reality. The wall is not only that concrete and barbed wire that cuts across the face of this land, but a kind of curtain has come down between Israeli Jews and the Arab world, which makes dialogue very, very much more difficult.
Is there a need then to find some sort of common language? I mean, it was brought up here that maybe the Christian language of love, hope, and so on may not be the right language to use at this moment. So how do you find the right language that goes for, you know, that you can deal with in for three different, very different communities?
Okay, here I think that love language is the right language for, because we are Christians and that is the language we speak. That is the language we must speak, even with the enormous challenges of a conflict that is ongoing and all the pain and suffering of the people who are living within the conflict. We must speak the language of love. When we speak about a common language within the political process, I think that that language for too long has been very superficial. First of all, it's been a language that has been imposed from the outside. All that language of peace process and dialogue that was brought with very good intentions by the different American administrations has difficulty sinking down when there is such incredible mistrust between the two sides, two sides that each one feels victim and hurt. So that when we say a common language, yeah, we can hope that a common language will be born, but it's difficult to imagine when there is no real meeting going on. So that I don't really see how we can do anything else than what we are called to as Christians, a tiny, tiny minority, less than 2% in either of the two societies we're talking about, whether it's Israel or Palestine. We need to continue living what we are called to live, which is the language of love. I think that we need to continue crossing the borders. We need to inculcate, at least in our own children, the respect of the other, and more than the respect of the other, getting to know the other in the hope that this might be a light that is needed. We're called to be the salt of the earth, the yeast and the dough, that this will be taken up and turned into a way in which, way beyond the Christian community, people will see that this has value. I want to go back again to the question of language. I think it's very important. As you saw, a confrontation between two Palestinian Christians, both of them absolutely committed to their Christianity, to their Palestinian identity, one coming out of the West Bank, with only the experience of an Israeli occupation, the other coming out of a real Israeli Jewish Hebrew-speaking experience. We studied together in the university. He's an integral part of Israeli society. Here, I think it's very important that we speak to each other so that we can further develop this Christian language, which might be able to become some kind of paradigmatic experience for our country. We can dream of that. We can hope that that would eventually become the case. What we need to do is continue working on the language of love within a situation which is so loveless. Around us, we're surrounded by the very loud discourses of hate. What I think is very important is that we reach out beyond the community and identify those in the Muslim community, those in the Jewish community, who also are struggling to formulate a language that would be very close to ours. We are not completely alone, neither in Muslim society, Palestinian civil society, nor in Israeli Jewish society. There are people out there who are looking for collaborators with their efforts to engage in this culture of peace, respect, justice, dignity. And I think that we need to really look around us and build these fronts that hopefully will grow.
We've been speaking here mostly about what we can do. What you, as an Israeli of Jewish heritage, what would you suggest to the Jews, to the politicians on the other side, that they can do to move this process along?
I think that here we have to come to terms with the fact that we must pay the price of peace. I'm very fortunate in that within Israeli society I've always found fellow travelers, people who are concerned with these issues of justice and peace, human rights and dignity. And that's why I say with such emphasis that they're out there, the people are out there. To my political leaders, I would say that the word resistance from within Israeli society is what I say to political leaders with whom I don't identify. Okay, I feel very alienated from the present political leadership of the State of Israel. I feel, and here speaking more a Jewish language than a Christian language, they are betraying something fundamental in our history as Jews. And that is, for hundreds and hundreds of years, we had an experience of powerlessness. Have we lost any sense of compassion for what that means? And I know this from many Jews who might not be able to formulate brilliant political analyses of the situation, but who are broken, because they see that we have become a powerful people like any other powerful people, completely without compassion. And this is, I think, the terrible reality of what happened during the last Gaza campaign. The lack of compassion was something that struck me very, very strongly from many, many of my Jewish Israeli brothers and sisters. And seeking out those Jewish Israelis who did feel like this was something that should not be happening, this is something we should not be doing, we should not be bombing concentrations of civilians. Here we huddled together, trying to console one another. And here I think again the question of hope becomes central. The Christian message of hope that God is faithful, God is just, God is loving, and therefore we must never lose faith that even in the darkest moments the light will come. By the way, this also connects to my South African experience, where I was called many times to remind my Israeli brothers and sisters that in the mid-80s, when South Africa was really at some of its darkest moments, most people could not imagine that within 10 years there would be a political solution to the problems of South Africa. God works in surprising ways. I think that that's what gives us the strength and courage to continue. The fidelity and the constant surprises that God prepares for us.
And a very warm thanks there to Father David Neuhaus, Latin Patriarchal Vicar in Jerusalem.